Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
This is the Toffee Web Podcast.
And it will be an Everton corner. It's all Everton now. McNeil to Drissa-Garnaghay. It's popped back out to him again. He finds Harrison. Harrison across, Branthwaite. Here's Drissa-Garnaghay. 1-0 Everton. He steered that in beautifully. Knew where he was going to put it. Fantastic finish. Everton 1, Brentford 0.
I mean, it's been an exhausting week for many reasons. The highs are more the highs, actually, but even that can tire you out, you know, after the big win on Wednesday and the emotion that goes into that. And I wondered if the players could respond. They have. And finding big moments, you know, stopping at one end, putting in the other. We've been questioned this season for our XG and how many times we haven't won games. And if you look at the stats and facts over a season, it pays you back. And I've said that all season. I've stuck by it and it has paid us back.
They say that a week is a long time in politics, but that can be true of football as well, something that Everton have demonstrated quite emphatically by turning their season on its head in pretty impressive fashion, it has to be said, to secure safety again with 3 games to spare. Saturday's 1-0 win over Brentford was the Toffees' third in the space of 6 days, and when added to the 2-0 victory over Nottingham Forest and the memorable conquest of the Red Rabble from across the park by the same scoreline, it's put the club 11 points clear of relegation zone and allowed an entire fan base to take a huge collective breath, well, for a few days anyway. The drama off the pitch is, of course, far from over. Hello again, Blues. Welcome back to the Toffee Web Podcast, where, to be honest, we're still adjusting to a life where we're not constantly stressed by the next Everton game or those of the teams around us. It's a welcome change. We'll talk about the Brentford game and reflect on a dramatic week in general before looking ahead to Friday's trip to Luton. a fixture that at one stage looked as though it might be another of those classic relegation six-pointers. Sky Sports clearly thought so, but is now a routine fixture, albeit with inconvenient scheduling for the intrepid travelling Toffees. But our gang is all here, minus Paul, who couldn't make it. Happy birthday, mate. And Adam, that was quite the week, wasn't it?
Just a bit, mate, yeah. it's flown by in a strangely fun way. It's felt a bit more like a normal week of football. Everton winning games, going into a game, having that kind of pre-match experience of feeling buoyant and excited, and just that you're going for the football and the entertainment of it all, rather than thinking, oh my God, if we don't win this, then that was a real, well, it's something I've certainly not felt all season. It's felt like every game has had something huge riding on it, and all the pre-match discussion in the pub was about who was playing and what was happening in the game, rather than necessarily, oh, what on earth's going to happen in this game. Obviously, Luton's result was being spoken about, but it was all very celebratory. It was great. It was a real party atmosphere, and the result on Wednesday obviously was a massive part of that, and that gave us that breathing room, that confidence, and going into the ground. I mean, that was some atmosphere on Saturday. It was a carnival feel, and it felt, that's how a game at the end of April in the sunshine at Goodison should feel. It should feel a little bit like, you know, the shackles are off, like you can enjoy it, whether that's a race for Europe or finishing in that magical seventh position, or just enjoying the game and seeing the season out and thinking, oh, I wonder what we'll do in the summer. That's felt so far away from us at so many points this season. And in the space of 7 days, as you say, it's just flip reversed. I feel like every kind of worry, every anguish moment, feel a bit silly now. We can all be fickle with football, but I think nobody saw this 180 coming. Nobody saw this change in the landscape, and the players, the manager, deserve a lot of credit. But you mentioned there in the build up about that away trip to Luton, which, as you say, is not exactly the best reward, a Friday night trip. Although, isn't it great going into that thinking, hey, it's a fun away day. We don't need to worry about playing in another 23 similarly interesting looking grounds that we don't normally visit. But the fans on Saturday were fantastic. The flags, the colour, the noise. It was bouncing. And the players, even though it wasn't the same level of performance as it was on Wednesday, which it was never going to be, was it? They got the job done in a way that we haven't seen over the last couple of months. We're grinding out wins in a Sean Dyche 1-0 fashion. And we're seeing confidence return to some of those players who've been starved of it, and paying the fans back in spades. So fantastic, as you say, just to take a breath, look forward and worry about how to build a stadium.
If you think about it, actually, in basic terms, this has been 4 years coming, 4 years in the making. The last time we had matches at the end of a season that didn't really make much difference if we won, drew or lost them was 2020. I mean, even at the end of Carlo Ancelotti's first season, we were still hoping to qualify for Europe. We were still trying to achieve something. So for 4 years, it feels like every Everton game has had this just pressure with it, this kind of deep feeling to it, which of course, you know, is kind of why we're so infatuated by this thing. Of course it is. It's because you care about it, and because you kind of want games to carry some form of, you know, jeopardy and whatever. But, you know, it's not normal to have 4 years of, well, in our kind of our way, it is worry. I mean, teams at the top of the table are probably worried, oh, can we win the league this year? Which European competition will we be in next year? You know, which cup will we win this year? Oh, what a jeopardy. for us, it's been more or less, I mean, probably the first year at the second year of Carlo or the first full season, yes, we were looking to get into something, but even then we had that kind of sinking, slipping feeling to it. And it feels so strange. I mean, I was looking through a couple of Premier League fixtures today. I was thinking, oh, Burnley got those coming up. And I was thinking, what does it matter? It doesn't, you know, I don't care, but won't it be interesting to see who goes down? The BBC ran this thing today on the, you know, yesterday on the website, which one of these three will go down, which two of these three. I was thinking, well, I might just click on this for a laugh. Brilliant. Love it. And it is so, it's credit. It's huge credit to everybody involved in the last week and indeed the last few months and years, because after Chelsea, I really did think this might be the most anxiety filled yet. But I'd like to say that Sean Dyche, and I know I've been a relatively big fan of his anyway on this pod. This isn't a told you so thing. This is just kind of, I'm
that's
really
okay.
Glad.
You can say it. You can say it.
I told you so, guys. the one doubt I had, and I remember saying it after the Chelsea game, is because we'd slipped so far from the standards that I thought he'd set, that I thought, yeah, well, whatever happens at the end of this season, is he going to get the chance to try and improve it next season? And I didn't know. And I thought it was mainly slipping out of his control a little bit. But you've got to say, I've always felt he was a coach that got the best out of what he's got. And let's be honest, at the moment, he hasn't got loads. But what he has got is he's turned around into a team that will hopefully, and I'm sure we'll come to the off-the-field stuff, will hopefully sail into the distance this summer and forget about these points deductions and move on. And that's huge credit. You know, if we had those deductions in any of the last two seasons, we would have been long gone. And it just shows how many points we've got. We've won more games than Brighton. Bournemouth have just set their own club record for top flight points or whatever it is. We're only one win behind them. You know, it's been the season we wanted it to be, in that we've been bang average, which has been great. But it's just the outside influences have made it feel like we're not. And fair play to him, fair play to the players for actually stepping up after that Chelsea debacle. And I was there Saturday and I really enjoyed it. I wasn't overly stressed. As soon as we saw the Luton's game, the Luton result, I was thinking, well, anything now is a bonus. That's great. And it was just a chance to enjoy it. It was a chance to enjoy it. I had a Goodison tour as well, which I'll tell you about later. I haven't done that for about 15 years. And it was just lovely. It was just kind of this dreamy, sunny, relaxed, calm Everton. More of that, please.
Yes, please. Yeah, as someone who, after the Chelsea game, was really, you know, expounding my misgivings and doubts about Mr. Dyche, I have to say that what he has achieved in such a short space of time is pretty remarkable. I mean, I put myself back in the headspace after the Chelsea game. Then we had the awful run of one win in 15 matches, combined with, you know, with a style of play which I think we can all agree hit a really low point against Burnley. And my concern at that point, and about keeping Dyche beyond this summer, which, depending on how the off-the-field stuff pans out, it does potentially offer an opportunity for a reset of a sort, and particularly where 777 partners are concerned, although it looks increasingly like less likely that they're going to be able to get this over the line. But they do have a structure in place with director of football and, you know, a global director of football and a head of football group that's kind of devoted to the recruitment side and the you know, that kind of structural side. So you would think that with a new company coming in, and a manager that really at that point seemed to be losing control, was that, you know, maybe they would be looking to bring in their own man. And so, as I say, my concern then was, particularly after Burnley, was that maybe the players themselves were no longer on board, and maybe even insulted to a degree by the tactics that were employed, particularly in that game, you know, against Burnley, because it really was. I mean, it was horrendous. And so, you know, with our collective Evertonian PTSD following the Benitez and Lampard experiences, it felt like it was happening all over again. As I say, another manager was losing his way, and was he going to be able to get the players back on side in time? And even if he did, was it going to be enough to prove that, you know, he's got what it takes to take the club forward beyond this season if we stayed up? I mean, the argument that you can't keep sacking managers is true, but only up to a point, because you need to stop hiring the poor managers to begin with. And there have been times at this season when it's felt like Everton had done that. You know, in the name of expediency last season, they brought in a man to essentially keep the club up. And then there was kind of no contingency beyond that. Obviously, this season, with the points deductions and the challenges we've had, it's remained that kind of, those conditions by which you would want someone like Dyche have remained in place. And so, you know, the concern, again, was maybe the effect of Dyche's motivational approach had worn off. But what these last three matches, you know, and this, as I say, wholly unexpected return of 9 points from nine has done, is it's afforded room for us now to take a step back and have a little perspective, particularly for me personally, and I'll own it, about just what he and his group have had to deal with as a group, as a squad. You know, I think, as I mentioned in my article for Toffee Web, him alluding to things that you could never imagine that he's had to deal with. There's probably a lot of that stuff that maybe gets lost in your own thinking, because you just don't know. You have no idea what he's been dealing with behind the scenes. So I can say, as I did after the Chelsea defeat, that, you know, it's his job to circle the wagons and control the controllables within the boundaries of Finch Farm. And, you know, it's easy to say from our vantage point, and understandable to a point from our frustration and almost panic after the Chelsea game. So, you know, I'm happy to have my mind changed for now. I mean, as Churchill said, he who never changes his mind won't ever change anything. I still have my doubts that he'll be able to get us above a certain ceiling in terms of, you know, achievements or playing style. I mean, even with more favourable conditions in terms of transfer budgets and general stability in the club, which, again, doesn't look like it's going to be forthcoming. But with the circumstances being the circumstances, again, as I wrote for the piece on our website, you know, he's proven once again that he's the right man for the current time.
Well, he was brought in as a firefighter. He does look exactly what you'd want a firefighter to look like as well. especially in the tracksuit, I've got to say. But I think the fact that, and we're all picturing it now, and I'm sure if the next Evan calendar are missing a trick if you don't do something about that. But the fact is, in the space of a couple of weeks, we keep talking about the Chelsea game, the massive change since then, and yeah, quite rightly, it was an aberration. We were right to feel angry and disappointed with the level of performance, and also the management within it. It's got to be sad. But you're right, Lennon, to go back to that Burnley game, because that was the last home game I attended, and the difference, even though the result was the same on Saturday, the level of performance was just we looked far better organised, far better drilled, far more of what I'd expected Dyche side to look like. It's not free flowing football. It's but then some of those heralded sides that you mentioned earlier, Andy, like you say, Brighton and Bournemouth, we'd be above them. We're doing things efficiently, or we would have been, bar lots of off the field nonsense, which I'm sure we'll get to. And then a really, really bad run of form. And yes, I think in another season, maybe in a more settled landscape, or maybe in a more past Majeri landscape, which is anything but settled, but we would have cut our ties with Dyche, and maybe in the moment that might have been the right thing to do in that fallow spell. But you could argue that spell never comes along were it not for the off the field issues. I think the change that he's put together, I mean, clearly we should never ever go to Portugal again. That's a terrible idea. You know, stick in the drizzly northwest.
Yeah.
Definitely don't fly Bonza Airlines, based on what I'm reading in the news. So don't go down to Oz either. Let's just go to Stoke for a week and drill the players, and you'll probably get what we saw on Saturday off the back of two other solid, very solid performances at home, which is a well-drilled side, which is better than the sum of its parts, which again had to play without a settled first 11. There have been times this season we've had on paper a much better 11 and looked far less organised. And on Saturday, we've got Ashley Young back in there, doing quite well, I have to admit. I think Churchill always said Ashley Young is not a winger.
I'm sure he did.
Shundyche ripped that page out of his diary, I think, and said no. But I think to get so much from that side in such a short space of time, that's arguably the biggest firefight of all. He's kind of he's been putting out lots of different fires at once. I could take the fire analogy too much, but I digress. I think he's done a fantastic job. I think he's certainly earned the right, as you say, Lyndon, regardless of what happens with the ownership situation in the summer, I think he's earned the right to have a go with some kind of backing, whatever that might look like. Yeah. This isn't Big Sam where you're looking at it going, oh no, this will never improve, because we've seen improvement. It's come quite late in the day.
Yeah.
But luckily not so late that we're going down to Kenilworth Road and thinking, oh my God, if we don't win this, then we're staring down the abyss. So before I keep rhyming, I'll pass on to you, Andy.
The fire analogy is a good one, though, because we've got this huge, great house that there was a huge, massive explosion in one room. And we thought we'd kind of put that out, and then it kind of got a bit better. And then they just keep popping up all over the place. And there might be another one coming as well. And it never feels like it's fully out. But on Deitch, I've had two or three different people say to me in the last couple of days, unconnected, oh, Deitch, and one of them's an Everton fan, one of them's not an Everton fan, and there was another non-Everton fan who all said, he's got to be in the discussion for manager of the year. That's their exact words. Now, I don't know whether I'd go that far, but if you think about it, you look down the league, and I mean, the Bournemouth manager's done a great job. You can't deny that. I think if Luton were to stay up, Edwards, it's probably a shoo-in. But beyond that, you can kind of see the reasoning. You can see what they're getting at, because what he's had to deal with, which is unlike any manager has ever had to deal with in the Premier League, I think he maybe should be in that discussion. And only a discussion, but he should be in it. And on this kind of thing about, oh, you know, it's only going to reach a certain ceiling with Deitch. We're going to get to there and then no more. Well, I'd argue I've never seen a Sean Deitch team which has had a decent amount of funding and isn't expected to do anything more than stay up. I mean, I don't think he's been in that position as a manager. And so he's kind of almost got himself pigeonholed into, well, I got the Burnley job and I stayed at Burnley for such a long time because I was effectively doing the same job every season, and it was amazing just to keep them there with that set of players, just developing the odd little thing that just did enough to keep them up. He got the Everton job because Everton was a mess and it was never going to be a huge development in style over the last year and a bit, because it just can't be at the moment. We haven't got that space, and he hasn't got the players that he would probably go, well, if we're going to properly play on the break, we might need a bit more pace. And if we're going to properly play on the break, I need players that can do this and do that, if that's his style, which I presume it is. It feels like it would be a team that would sit in and then bang. That's how I see maybe a developed Sean Deitch team playing. But, you know, he's not really had the chance to do that. And players have been swept out from underneath his feet, the ones that did have a bit of pace. And he's not really been able to bring anybody in. So I would say I'd be quite looking forward to seeing what he can do if we manage to get those kind of building blocks ready for him. Also should just mention, I just love that Goodison's back, because Goodison had a difficult journey in this last, especially this season. There was times this season where Goodison felt like it was almost a hindrance rather than a help. We've discussed it, haven't we? We said at one point, is it actually better that we play away from home? And I think for a while it was, and that's sad because, you know, having been there a couple of times in, you know, recently, it's just, it's a wonderful place. I'm preaching to the converted here, but it's a wonderful place, and it's so special, and it is magic. And to have it back where we know that, you know, those three results in a week, it feels like Goodison's back with us, I think. And it's, you know, it's what it should be. And, you know, if we can replicate that week, I don't know, twice, three times in the next year, we'll be absolutely fine next season as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's a hard one, isn't it? Hearing different people's perspectives. Some people have described this last season as the worst of the last three. For me personally, I just reached a point where I just couldn't worry about it to the level that I was before, for my own health. And so I just kind of reached a sort of almost passive acceptance that we're going to be okay, if only because Luton are going to be so bad that they're not going to be able to reach us. We're going to be okay, you know, and thankfully we've got some of those points back from the Premier League. But asking the fans to reproduce the kinds of atmospheres that they did, obviously the end of the Lampard season and the end of the last season under Dyche, when even then it was a challenge to try and bring that intensity every single game. I mean, there's only, as we've said, that old cliche, there's only so many times you can go to the well. And so, you know, probably largely to do with the style of football that we were employing, and, you know, obviously the challenges that the team was facing in terms of the lack of options available to Dyche. You know, there was an element of, you know, we have to sort of put up with what we're putting up with, and it's hard to really get excited about that. It was only obviously once the first points deduction came down, and the ferocity of the anger that came out of that, you know, the response to that obviously triggered that nice run of four straight wins after the United game. But yeah, it's when the chips are really down that you can really, as we know, focus that passion. And, you know, once again, the 1878s, you know, they stepped forward and, I mean, created something really, really special. And, you know, we've said it over and over again on this podcast that you can't buy that kind of passion and devotion. You know, it's amazing. But going back to the Brentford game, for me, it was never going to have the intensity of the derby. But I didn't think the first half was as flat as many have said. Maybe that's because I was expecting a much bigger drop off in the performance. And honestly, with the potential hangover from Wednesday, with, as we said, you know, Luton losing, which really eased the pressure, and the fact that Brentford had Tony and Whistler and Mbeumo all back and had just come off a 5-1 win at Kenilworth Road, I honestly didn't expect us to win. I know that Paul, he'd done his predictions for the remainder of the season, and he'd put us down for a draw against Brentford as well. And I don't think, you know, we could have really complained too much if we'd only got a point in that game. Adam, there was obviously no Beto, and Calvert-Lewin wasn't quite over his illness or that knee issue. So Youssef Chimiti got what was no doubt for him a long-awaited first Premier League start. How did you think he did?
I thought he did okay, on the base that he got very little in the way of service. Jordan Pickford's kicking, not his shot stopping, which is always in fine working order, but his kicking wasn't great, and
it's been poor for a while.
It has, yeah, it has.
I don't know why. Yeah.
And obviously, while he's still keeping us in games with great saves, and I thought one he made
right.
Yeah, but one he made from Tony on Saturday was, well, I think it's a world-class save. And he did well as the game went on. But yeah, as you say, it's an element of our game that used to be an extra weapon, and it's one we don't really see. I think maybe if we are looking to sort of Dyche 2.0 side, if we did have some more pace in the side on the break, then he'd have a few more options. In the past, we had the likes of Iwobi and Gray looking to make those runs that he likes, rather than just having to lump it forward. But yeah, going back to Chimiti, he did okay. He's clearly very raw. I feel like I've said that about all of our centre forwards for 5-6 years. But he is very raw, which you'd expect. He's young. He's hardly played any football at any senior level, let alone for Everton. He showed promise. I thought the touch he made for Decore's chance, which I'm not going to lie, I'd gone for a wee.
He didn't miss much.
Having watched it back, yeah. Well, at that point, I mean, and again, if we're talking about my feeling around the game, I think I said about the Burnley game, where before that free goal from Calvert-Lewin, the boo was just ready to emerge from my mouth and 40,000 others. So the fact that I felt relaxed enough to go for a wee and get in the queue for a pint with Andy Burnham, I think that suggests a level of relaxation that is quite unusual.
You're burying the lead there, Andy Burnham.
Yes, yeah. He said, "Are you that guy who rambles on and makes weird comments about Sean Dyche's firefighter outfit on top of him?" I was like, "Yeah, that's me." Best of luck. But back to Yusuf Chimiti.
Yes,
the real Northern powerhouse. Fantastic touch for Decore chance. He obviously got played through late on, and that was his little opening. Having looked back at it, it was ruled offside at the time. It was pretty close.
Yeah.
Watching his movement for that though, it's good. It's nimble. He showed something, and he got himself in the right positions. I think the more telling thing for me about Chimiti was our best chances came from McNeil, who I thought again looks far more back to his normal self, more confident, willing to take on chances. But you see those opportunities where he gets on the left-hand side and kind of blazes it across goal. And I feel maybe if Dominic's in the side, he takes a little longer and maybe tries to find the centre-forward rather than think, I'm going to gamble on this from a difficult angle. But all in all, I think he did well. I'd really like to see more of him off the bench in the future, or maybe he'd be the sort of player who'd fare well with maybe half a season out on loan in the same way that Ellis Sims and Tom Cannon did, and then come back a lot sharper with some games under his belt. But I thought he equipped himself well. What did you think, Andy?
I like him. I would say I'm a bit more positive than you on that front. I thought he had a good game, and I liked his movement. I liked the fact that he is already... he feels quite feisty. He's got an edge to him. He doesn't really take things lying down. I liked the little chip finish that he tried that went wide. At the time, I was thinking, oh, gosh, did you have to choose that finish? But then I thought, actually, that's quite a good sign. We've had too many attacking players, or call themselves attacking players, that just lash at stuff and just are so kind of random in front of goal, and so kind of there's no composure. And I felt at least he showed he was trying to use a bit of composure, and I'm going to chip you here. I just think if you've even got that in your mind on your Premier League full start, then that's a good thing. I like him. I think there's a lot there, and I have questioned why we signed him. Not why we signed him, he's obviously a good young player, but why we signed him at the point we did, considering how tight money is. But if we can see a bit more of him, and maybe in the next three games we will, I think there's a definite, there's an Everton number 9 in there somewhere. I'm not suggesting he's going to go and break all the goal scoring records, but I think he's a good young player. And the only other reference point I have really is a few seconds off the bench here and there, and that Doncaster first half, which I've tried to forget. And that's the only reference point I have. And that he was a million miles on from that. So I was impressed. I was pleased. I was pleased he got a go, actually. I mean, it was more by necessity than anything else, but I was pleased he got it. And it would have been the perfect week if he just topped it off with a goal right at the end. But hey, let's get back on our box.
Yeah, I think it was a good sign actually that Deitch played him, because I mean he could have gone with Dan Juma up front. No, I don't think it would have worked as well. And I think he did really well. I mean, playing up front as the lone striker for Everton is never an easy task. Playing up front as the lone striker in a Sean Dyche team is even harder, particularly against, you know, players like Christopher Ayer and Ethan Pinnock, is no easy task, you know. And it was a lot of trying to challenge for aerial balls and chasing Jordan Pickford's errant kicking. So I was encouraged. I mean, the kid's at 19, as you said, and he's barely played any football for Sport in Lisbon, let alone for us. Again, we only had that reference point of that Doncaster debut, which really was quite poor. But then again, he's 19 for playing his first match in England. So I think he did well. There's plenty of signs, nice little touches. You know, going back to that Decore chance, that should have been our first and one of only two shots on target. It was a pretty wild finish from Decore, but I liked what I saw. Hopefully you'll get a couple more opportunities before the end of the season, and and get the chance to sort of operate in a team that's not quite as desperate for points next season as it is. And he'll get more minutes, I think. It's clearly, as is Deitch's way, he will stay with his tried and true and his experienced players when he really needs to get points. So I think he had acquitted himself well.
I mean, I'd definitely start him if Dom's not back to full fitness, and I'm not sure what the timeline will be now with Beto. He'll be coming up to a point where he'd be able to play if he is fit, but probably not in time for Luton. So I'd definitely play him again. But I think it would be a shame if he were to go into next season and have a similar one like this, where he's very much kind of an impact player for 5-10 minutes at a time. I think, mentioned Ellis Sims earlier, you're now looking at a player whose value will have moved on tenfold since we let him go, because of all that senior football that he's had, and because he's been able to mould himself into a really good centre forward. So, and I think Chimiti physically, and as you say, Andy, in terms of his confidence and his belief to kind of take a chance that way, he's got something about him. So yeah, hopefully we see a bit more of him this season, and then next season, yeah, let's be sensible. Let's make sure he gets some minutes.
I think the space that you're on about, Lyndon, for people to grow is another huge symptom of the last 3 years. Mm. There hasn't been the space. There's been no space for anything. There's been no space for us to feel relaxed. There's been no space for the team to feel relaxed and confident. And there's just been no room, no mental, no physical room, and I think he is a symptom of that. And I think that probably shows how good Jarrad Branthwaite is, that he's just come into the team and none of that applies. None of that applies at all. He's playing in a position actually where there's an awful lot more pressure, especially if you're under the cosh and we've been in games where we haven't been winning and we've got to try and keep clean sheets. I mean, my word. I mean, I've seen him a couple of times in the flesh, and that's a player. I mean, he wasn't even outstanding against Brentford, and you still think, he's just doing things. He's doing the nuts and bolts of football, nuts and bolts of playing centre back, really naturally, without any fuss. And he's gone into a team which in a season which at times has been a right mess, and he's just sailed through it. I think but he's benefited, of course, from being on loan, from getting the football, all that kind of stuff that Adam was talking about. So, it's a bit unfair to compare them, but it just shows how good he's been, that he's just kind of been dropped into that, and he's swimming out the front, let alone just you know, treading water. He's setting the pace.
But that's why I think in an ideal world, you send him out on loan next season. You know, we get someone else in, a bit more experienced, and you send him out on loan and let him, you know, have the exact same experience that Branthwaite did, and then come back and really start to prove his worth, just because, you know, given his age.
You're listening to the Toffee Web Podcast.
Luton away on Friday again, a game that, as I said in the intro, was looming like a potential relegation decider a few weeks back, but can now be approached in a far more relaxed manner. Adam, what are you expecting from this one?
I mean, yeah, it's clearly very different. I'm at a wedding on Friday, and I was thinking, how do I get away and lock myself in a quiet room? I'm performing at a wedding, I should say. I'm not at like a friend's wedding, and you know, they're on the first dance, and I'm like, oh, I can't believe Mikalenko's out with a torn ankle. Even I'm working, I was trying to work out how I could kind of get away, and the fact that it is now more of a free hit. It's a chance to see some of the players, some of the younger ones, as we mentioned, also players who've got something to play for in terms of a contract. So we didn't really speak about Idris Garnagaybe, but again, man of a match and a fantastic performance against Brentford, but with his contract soon to expire. So you would imagine, in terms of options, it's going to be a pretty similar side to the one we saw against Brentford, just because of injuries. I mentioned Mikalenko there. Really sad news for him, but also potentially positive that he doesn't require surgery on his ankle injury. Could have been a lot worse. And now he'll be sweating on his fitness for the Euros. So good luck to him. I think even though we coped well without him, we do miss Mikalenko. Another shout out to Ben Godfrey as well, who's filled in and done a very solid job in the games that he's had to come into. Not in an easy situation, he's done well. Harrison's certainly got a lot to play for, because he's coming to the end of his loan spell, and out of the loanees, he's the one most likely, I guess, to turn it into a permanent move. You'd imagine Dan Juma now will be a strange kind of Everton story of the player who nearly signed for us and didn't, and then did sign for us and rarely played. It's just did well against Doncaster, though. Got to say that. But Harrison is an interesting case. He's worked really hard over his last week and has put in some shifts. And I thought he was better than I've seen him against Brentford. But he's certainly one who would have to, I'd say, really chip in these next couple of games to win me over to the point that I'd be thinking about signing permanently. Money issues, nonetheless, but. Yeah, it's a much more relaxed me. It's a much more relaxed Everton. So hopefully we can play a little bit with the handbrake off to an extent, and hopefully show a bit of that confidence. And as you mentioned, those fans who've bizarrely got to travel down on a Friday night all the way to Luton will hopefully be rewarded with some kind of performance, because boy, do they earn it for doing that.
Yeah, I mean, all the pressure's on them. I think we're going to set up pretty much the same way as what we have done. I don't know really whether Luton, or what we've seen over the last week, have they got enough to really break us down? I'm not sure. It'll be interesting seeing a game where the opposition is under far more pressure than Everton. Because that, again, that's not something we've seen in quite some time. And I suppose you could argue in the derby that maybe Liverpool were under a bit more pressure to win the league. But, you know, it's been a while, really, since we've had a kind of a game where the other team, it's all or nothing. And for us, it's just a case of, you know, 7 out of 10 to see if we can, you know, be consistent and get something. I'm just really looking forward to it. I mean, I can't remember the last time I've genuinely thought, oh, God, it's only 3 days to go till Everton are on. And it's just a lovely feeling because it doesn't matter. And also because we might see a slightly different feel. We might see, as Sean Dyche is in there, we might see a slightly different kind of performance and attitude to getting on the ball and trying things. And you never know. I want to see Chimiti start as well. I think that'd be great. And apart from that, I think he can only really change the centre of midfield. I mean, you might see Gomez. Is it a time for Gomez down there? I'm not sure. Maybe Sheffield United at home might be the time we see Gomez again. But I mean, I thought Garnaghy was fantastic on Saturday, and I thought Jimmy Garner played well. They gave it great energy. So maybe he'll stick with what he's got in there. And we just go again and see whether they can break us down.
Yeah, I think I was a touch surprised you didn't change that central midfield up against Brentford, but then in retrospect, not so much because he was clearly rewarding, you know, the players who got the job done against Liverpool. And I mean, Idrissa Gueye had the week of his Everton life, didn't he? 2 goals in 3 games. I think I don't actually know the ins and outs of the concussion protocol. I know that there's a minimum of 6 days, and then it's kind of on a case by case basis. So it could be that Beto is able to play, and if he is, I would be very surprised if he doesn't. In the event that Calvert-Lewin doesn't make it, I just think that Dyche is going to want to go out on as big a high as he can. I think collect as many points as possible. Now every place that we make up, that we finish higher, is obviously worth, you know, more than a couple of million each, and I think that's probably why we're persisting with the appeal. Is if we get any points back, that might make a difference there. And as we know, every million that we can pick up here and there is, you know, it's a potential loan fee here. It's potential that there. So it's, yeah, I'm hoping that we just keep rolling on. You know, we've got, you know, 3 wins on the bounce. Let's make it 4, and then 5 against Sheffield United. And it is nice to look at that at the bottom of the table and actually be intrigued about the fact that Burnley might yet. I mean, you know, it's hard because they've got some tough games, but they might yet do this, and that would be a you know, quite the achievement. And actually, going back to what you were saying about the Dyche's candidacy for manager of the season. I mean, I'm not sure you can go 13 matches without a win during a season and still win manager of the year, but the point that you make about what he's had to deal with and what he's done, you know, that still stands. And it's certainly, as you say, worthy of being in the conversation. Absolutely. But I suspect if Arteta can somehow get this over the line, he's got to be a shoo-in for manager of the year, because anyone who beats Pep to the title is... got to be fairly superhuman, I would think.
It was also the race for the Golden Glove to keep an eye on. The Castrol Golden Glove, sorry, I should say. Shout out to this week's sponsors, Castrol. But isn't it nice just to talk about nonsense like that, or to, as you say, look at the relegation? I've not looked at the bottom of the table in a couple of days. It's been refreshing. To be able to just sort of be a bystander for a little while, at least. The jeopardy's fun at certain times. And I think you said, Andy, quite rightly early. Yeah, but that is a big part of why we're all a bit addicted to this. You wouldn't want every game to feel like a dead rubber, but it's certainly, when I was looking at this fixture, even just a couple of weeks ago, I was thinking, oh my word, I don't think my nerves can take the idea of us going down to Kenilworth Road, no offence, and buckling. So being able to go there and play, yeah, I've maybe been a bit optimistic by saying play the handbrake off, but just play, enjoy the game, use that confidence. And as you say, 4 wins on the bounce, who would have thought that was even a possibility? Four wins on the bounce at home. That's what we're currently on. I don't know the last time we won five on the bounce at home. Sure, it's a long time ago, so that's another little record to chase down.
I think I saw the stat that four on the bounce at home was under Ancelotti, I think. But quote me on that. But beyond, to go five on the bounce at home, I'm not sure how far you have to go back. But
yeah, and I think you'd have to go even further back if one of those was the derby as well. So
yes, absolutely.
Yeah, but all big games. Yeah, that was obviously a big result. But all of these others were against our direct rivals at the bottom of the table. Yeah, Brentford might have moved away from it by the time that fixture rolled around, but that could easily have been a real pressure cooker of a game. So to come out of that without any goals conceded as well, it's a real achievement. So let's take some of that down to Luton and as you say, climb the table a little. Who knows? Certainly helps with the coffers.
It does. Yeah, when we were looking at this one as part of that block of games against, as you say, those teams at the bottom half, that we either needed to win or should be winning or both, this one always stuck out to me as potentially the most difficult one. Mm. You know, it's a way we often seem to struggle in what feels like these, you know, these cramped stadiums against these plucky underdogs. But when you look at their recent form and particularly the way that Brentford took them apart the other week, we should go there with confidence now that we can take the points, I would think.
Just looking, I think Marco Silva managed four wins on the league wins on the trot twice in one season, 18-19. But I can't see Carlo winning that many on the trot, not all in the league anyway. So it is, decent territories in there. I going back to Luton, I think we've all done that thing in our head where we've imagined the commentary, Ross Barkley has sent Everton down.
Townsend, again.
The boyhood blue comes back to haunt. And the camera just switches to the Everton fans behind the goal and they're just doing you would do in that scenario. We've all done that. I've certainly done that in my head about that game. I'm glad that we don't have to worry about all that. It's the next two games, I think, are a great opportunity to get another 6 points. I know we're getting all giddy now, but it's an opportunity to get six more points and potentially climb up another. I don't think we can get too much further, can we? But we can certainly catch Palace, and that'll probably be about that. Well, mind you, we might get 2 points back, mightn't we? So we could in another universe catch Fulham, but let's see on that one. I'm quite happy where we are for the time being.
Yeah, Palace are in a good vein of form. This Drasner seems to have had a really good impact. But let's see what happens.
You know the lyrics to the Everton song "Never Shone So Brightly."
Yes,
and I know, like, for the last since we've been using that song, it's kind of felt we're not shining that brightly at the moment, but. What I do think, and maybe in a different way to what the song was intended, but I do think from all that's happened this season and in the last few seasons, but especially this season with the points deduction, especially the kind of another rally from this fan base and these amazing people that organise all this and make us fit actually underneath all of the rubbish that goes on, really proud to be Everton fans. I do think in our own way, we have shone quite brightly in the last, certainly in the last month, but I think this season as a whole, and that's not saying that we've got great results all the time. That's not what I mean. I think there's a part of that lyric that definitely is still true. And it might not be that Everton's winning everything, but I think the club is still shining in its own way. I'm not sure. We've mentioned it many, many times, but you put another club that's in the cohort of clubs that are a bit like Everton in this league, in the position we've been in, not this season, last season, the season before, especially this season, I'm not sure they come out of it shining at all. And I think... It just being up there and being on the tour Friday and then going to a game on Saturday and seeing it, feeling it, I think we do shine. And I saw the Gladys Street as the teams were coming out on Saturday, and I thought, wow, this is still special, and that's been not created, that's natural, but it's been emphasized, and it's been, from all the coverage we've had, it's been like on public show, and I still think we shine brightly.
Well said. I've seen a couple of jokes made on social media about how, you know, so Liverpool fans in particular, how they've reacted to just their recent stumble. And the people have said, you lot wouldn't last 5 minutes as Everton fans, given what we've had to put up with. But I mean, if you take that old adage that, you know, the club is the fans are the club, the club has not shone more brightly than it has in the last 2-3 years. I mean, as we keep saying, this fan base has dragged this club through, you know, three battles against relegation now, and it does, you know, it feels like we've never been more unified as a fan base, because we've had to look, and, you know, again, the off the field stuff is still hanging out there, but we've had to sort of stare death in the face and said, you know, not today. And it really does emphasize the fact that we saw it in 94, and we saw it in 98, and we've seen it now in the last 3 years, that this club, there's a force there that will not allow it to get sucked down, and that rests in the fans.
Well, that's the other part of the song, isn't it? That's the spirit. That intangible thing. That's what you've hit on there, Andy. That feeling, that sense around it, but... yeah, it's defiance, isn't it? And sometimes it's been thrust upon us as a fan base. Certainly at times this season, it's felt like we're just having to keep the walls up from our door on a daily basis. But to walk into Goodison, to feel that noise, to feel it running through you, I know for a fact that we'll take that with us into the new stadium. And I do hope that, although it has fostered and forged this incredible atmosphere over the last couple of years, and as you say, Lyndon, it's been unifying, I do hope that we can enjoy that last season at Goodison, but we can bring that feeling together as a positive force, rather than have to go, you know, rather than always having to taboo the Premier League anthem, but we can just enjoy the game. Yeah. And it's right that we do. I'm not saying that by any means, but the fact that we can go into the game and just be proud of the players and the badge, rather than worrying about all these external forces. But I know you're about to talk about 777, so
yeah.
Fire away.
It's as I keep saying, there isn't really much more to add, really. It's just a situation that's dragging on. It's obviously, with every week that passes, that they don't meet these conditions, and the principal one really is being able to repay this MSP Sports Capital loan, you know, and the more stories that come out about court cases here and missed payments there, and obviously, you know, their budget airline going under, I'm not sure in terms of their bottom line how big a development that is, but it's just one more very large red flag, you know, about this company, in particular the fact that I think that from what the reporting is, that ACAP, which has been their principal source of funds for most of the acquisitions that they've been doing, including the money that they've fronted to us, has come from ACAP. 777 Partners have sourced that from ACAP, with ACAP now pulling back. And they've reportedly repossessed these aircraft because they want to start getting the money that they're owed by 777 Partners back. And this is one of the ways they're doing it. And yet 777 have still come through with another £16 million today. You know, just sort of got that one in under the deadline, which, again, according to reports, was was what was Everton needed to make payroll this month, which is a fairly alarming thing to think about. But they've managed at every juncture to come up with the money, but now it looks like, well, how much longer are they going to be able to do that? So I think they've managed to kick the can down to the end of the season. If they can get to June, then potentially the club has the option of selling some rather high ticket players to then bring in more money. But that's just going to go towards the debt, surely. I mean, we're going to lose 8 players probably this summer, potentially. Maybe just a Gay stays, but there's loans ending and other contracts of some fairly elderly players like Coleman and then Ashley Young, who probably won't be here next season. But we've still got to sign more players this summer, so somehow. So it's just a story that doesn't seem to have an ending. But the realities of the situation will dictate that at some point something's going to have to give.
Yeah, it's a mess, isn't it? And I long for the day where we don't have to say things like A cap on this podcast. Because as far as I'm concerned, a cap is what you're wearing, Lyndon, not something that I can speak knowledgeably about whatsoever. But I do think, what I do know is, as you say, there are quite a staggering number of players coming to the end of a contract, which if we had the large bloated squad that we had, say, a couple of seasons ago, you'd go, okay, fair enough. Yeah. But we're not in that same arguably blessed position of having lots of numbers. If you look at the likes of Gomez, who would probably leave, Dele Alli, you would presume would leave, two fullback options you mentioned in Coleman and Young, the two loanies out wide, these are pretty key areas of the pitch, and then our most saleable asset is Jared Branthwaite. So suddenly then centre-back becomes a problem position if that was to happen. It would be nice to have some clarity on this, to know what we're working with, because I think I've seen us tentatively linked with a few players coming to the end of a contract, Brownhill at Burnley and Didi at Leicester. Yeah. They feel Daichi, don't they? They feel good.
Daichi,
they can fight some fires next season. But I think...
Nice.
Thank you. Back on to Pyromaniac here. But to do a rebuild job of any scale, you need some funds. And at the moment, we are taking money from a prospective buyer to pay our running costs before the end of a season going into the end of a stadium build, which I mentioned to you, Lynn, just before we start recording. There's been a flurry of nice videos on social media, which is somewhat reassuring, also somewhat worrying. I think we just need clarity on this, and that's without getting into the potential implications of MSP, FFP, lots of other acronyms. But at least that's now our main worry. It's not this plus relegation,
right?
Plus, have we got the right man for the job? We can strike two of those off for now.
I've got nothing to add because I feel at my depth of it all now, to be honest. And I was kind of half scanning all this happening today. I noticed that the BBC have put out an article within the last hour, so this is like Tuesday night, kind of saying that Everton are not taking insolvency advice, which is good. I'm pleased about that. But are considering ways of restructuring short-term debt, which is a nicer situation to be considering than what I saw on social media earlier. I mean, I thought actually, not that I'm in any way any authority on this, but I thought once the Premier League safety was absolutely confirmed, which of course it is now, I thought actually this might move quite quickly. But I don't know whether it will somehow.
Well, yeah. I mean, it would move quickly if 777 could find the money. And it would move quickly if there was these mysterious, rumored other interested parties stepped in. But, you know, with every tranche of money that 777 put in, the harder it is for another buyer to come in, because it's just that much more debt to have to deal with when you come on. But the social media panic earlier was, I think, really around the Guardian's headline, which referenced, you know, I think Adam and I, which we were talking off air before, which referenced, you know, insolvency advisors, whereas the BBC report that you mentioned, Andy, and then the Telegraph, they went with debt restructuring advisors, which is a lot easier to get on board with. But I think when you look at how many people have skin in this game, I can't see how it gets to the point where the club goes into administration. There's far too much money to be lost here. And I think that someone somewhere is going to find a route through it. I don't know whether Farhad Mashiri's got, you know, any more money stuffed down the back of his sofa. I suspect not. But I think by hook or by crook, someone's got to figure out, or at least get us to, you know, get us to the point. It's actually... I wonder if they're now wondering if they should have gone for a mid-season opening for Brandon Moore-Dorf, because obviously that money starts to come in midway through next season, and without restructuring the debt, rather annoyingly but conveniently, the projected income uplift from Brandon Moore-Dorf would actually cover the interest payments on our debt. Doesn't allow for anything else, mind you, but I guess we'll just have to wait and see. As I say, every week it gets a bit more worrying, but every week potentially closer to some kind of resolution. So we'll just have to wait and see what happens.
It is worth saying that, yeah, while we've been recording, it has, further to that BBC thing, it says, as of Tuesday, 777 has sent in a fresh loan to cover the working capital needs of a club. Yeah, so £16 million.
Which takes him to £200 million. And rights and media funding are 225. MSP sports capital is 168. It's a lot of debt.
So does that 16 million effectively keep running costs for May?
Until the end of May, yes. So it gets us to the end of the season.
Yeah.
But then, you know, you've got to... Yes, but the 1st of June will roll around, but unless we sell someone like Onana or Branthwaite on the 1st of June, then you've got, obviously, another... Yeah. But June will have to be taken care of as well.
But so. What I'm thinking about, obviously, is points. And you hear this kind of snap 9 points for administration. Where I was thinking earlier, crikey, you might have to beat Luton. but that seems like we're certainly not going to go into administration before the end of the season, even if we go in then. So the worst case scenario is -9 next year.
Yeah, I saw a reference to the fact that in the EFL, if you go into administration after something like the first week of March, then it takes effect the following season. But I also saw a tweet that it could be a convenient thing that if we do have enough points before the end of the season, that we conveniently go into administration and you know, kick those and take the 9 points this season. I can't see that happening, to be honest. I mean, administration is the absolute last resort. It's not something that you take lightly at all.
No. And as you say, there's too many people involved. It's not just Majeri's money. And I've got inverted commas around that because it's not really his money, is it? but it's probably not even his sofa that he's got his money buried behind. there's far too many moving parts there. So you'd assume there is some way to get over the line. And then doesn't the TV money come in that June period as well?
I don't think it comes until August.
Oh.
Yeah. So.
Well.
Adam's got to go back to the drawing board now.
Yep.
We shall just wait and see. But... I think that's enough rambling from us for another week. We'll be back next week. See what happens at Luton. See what happens if there's any advances or developments on the off the field stuff. or if we're just going to drizzle on to the end of the season with 777 Partners still kicking around in the background as our potential buyers or not. But until next time, Blues, thanks again for listening. As always, take care as always, and as always, up the Toffees.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.